This week on Barbell Shrugged, we interview the author of The School of Greatness, Lewis Howes, and we review the 8 principles of greatness.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Changing lives.
Which one?
Changing the world.
Here we go. Yeah. Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe, standing here with Chris Moore and Doug Larson. And we have our guest, Lewis Howes.
That's not from, me. That's not.
Yeah. The yes. author of The School of Greatness. That book's coming out October 27th.
Correct.
And you also have an awesome podcast where you find out about how people are great.
Well, yes.
What
leads makes somebody great?
What leads to greatness?
Well, 8 principles lead to greatness is what I talk about in the book. But the School of Greatness.
We'll get back to that.
Yeah. That's what we call a tease right there.
So yeah. Essentially, you're interviewing people about how they became so successful in whatever field they're coming from?
Is that kind of it? Originally, the reason I started the podcast, I'm interested to hear why you guys started yours, but the reason I started...
We had nothing better to do.
We were so bored.
Yeah.
Don't you guys want to put your voice on the internet? Yeah.
I was living in New York City, just crushing life, having a time of my life. Moved from small town Ohio, where, you know, AJ has actually lived for a bit doing some lifting.
Because y'all were buddies before, right?
Yeah. And moved to New York, was crushing life. Business was blown up, and then I met a girl. All stories start with a girl. All stories start with a girl. I met a girl.
You framed it like everything was so perfect, and then.
It was. And then it got better before it got really bad.
Okay.
She lived in L.A., and so I ended up moving out to L.A. for a girl, which was bad. Mm. Bad news bears.
And you're still here.
Yes.
That's and the real takeaway from the show.
The day I moved, she broke up with me. I didn't have a place.
Like the day you got to town?
The day I flew into town, she broke up with me. She
Dang,
sabotaged
man.
The relationship. She was so scared. I didn't have a place yet. I was like Airbnb-ing it here in L.A. Mm. And I left my place in New York, so I was homeless, essentially. And I was like, do I go back to New York, but I don't have a place? Do I stay? What do I do?
We got to figure the universe brought you here then for some damn reason.
So it brought me for a reason. And we ended up like back and forth for a number of months, but it was like depressing and miserable. But I was in L.A. traffic. You guys drove up here and it was miserable,
yeah, it sucks,
right?
Man.
It sucks.
It takes 40 minutes to circle the block.
Oh, my God. So, so I was in L.A. traffic and I'm just trying to figure out. I just sold a company. I was like, what do I want to do next in my life? Like, what does I really want to do? And I was asking some friends, Pat Flynn from smartpassiveincome.com. I don't know if you guys know the podcast. Mm-hmm. And a couple other buddies, Derek Halpern, who had a podcast. I was like, you know, what's really working for your guys' business? How are you generating traffic and leads? And they were like, podcasting. I was like, what? Isn't this dead? And I was like,
because it had been around for a while.
How long ago was this?
This was, I launched in January 2013. So it was probably like the end of 2012.
Oh, you're way behind.
Right? Yeah. When did you guys launch?
Like early 2012.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So and we started doing some recording in the later part of 2010.
Yeah. And so I was like, if these guys can do it, I think I can do a podcast. Like, how can it be that hard? But I was like, really, what do I want to talk about? Do I want to do like a business show? I wasn't sure. But I was like, I really just want to interview like my friends who are like some of the most inspiring people in the world that I've met through sports, through my business, just like networking at masterminds. I was like, they have some incredible information that the world needs to hear about. And I was like, I want to interview people from all walks of life, not just entrepreneurs, which a lot of these shows were doing. But I was like, I want to interview athletes to scientists to doctors to celebrities.
I love that because you start seeing
spiritual
patterns,
leaders.
Right?
Yeah. So what are the patterns that the most successful people in the world have on every industry?
Are you asking like the same types of questions or
no,
do you have like
evolved.
A series of questions like Tim Ferriss?
I don't know. I have different questions for – I research each guest and, you know – watch their videos, their books, things like that. Read their books, and then
you do a lot more than we do.
Yeah, I've done
research. Yeah. We read stuff. Totally.
And over time, I just kind of got a flow of like what I wanted to ask, and I asked the same few questions at the end, like 3 or 4 similar questions.
Yeah.
Kind of like, what's your definition of greatness? What's it mean to you? Things like that. But really, I'm just trying to find those things that they never say in the media that'll open up to the world and give them a couple little tangible takeaways to my audience. So it's blown up since then. It's just been a great experience. As you guys know, it's so much fun.
It is a lot of fun. So so a lot of people that watch this show, this is primarily like a fitness, CrossFit, weightlifting, powerlifting type show.
Yes.
And so, but you're actually a pretty accomplished athlete yourself. You played pro football for a number of years, and now you're trying to go to the Olympics?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I played arena football. My dream was always to be in the NFL. I was too slow of a receiver, too white of a receiver.
But you had some success. I saw –
Yeah.
We share some characteristics of being slow on the football field and trying to do our best. But you had more success than I think I had. I saw on the wall back there, you had the newspaper clipping. Tell your achievement, man. Was it? You caught 418 yards in a single game?
418 yards in a single game. Broke a world record for the most yards ever caught in a game, any high school, pro, collegiate level.
That's not an easy thing to do.
It was kind of like an accident. You know, we were just... They just couldn't stop me. They just kept throwing me
deep balls. No, 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 Lewis. You were in a state of flow.
I wasn't a state of flow.
Fancier way of saying
I wasn't a state of flow. It was like it was just so crazy. I remember that game very vividly, but great experience. We actually lost the game, so I was so depressed at the end of the game. It was so sad, man. I thought like,
look, I'm so awesome and it means nothing right now, guys.
It was really like sad. It was like homecoming. It was like every alumni was there, so I felt like the god of like the day, right? I was like, just dominating. But then at the end of the day, we like lost on the last minute. We lost. So depressing, and so none of it meant anything to me. I didn't know I broke the record. I thought maybe I got like 100 yards and like a couple touchdowns and like 7 catches.
I feel like the end of the game, coach was driving home like, man, maybe we should have used some of the other players,
right? Exactly.
Well, you're like a young Michael Jordan. You scored all the points and the team didn't do their dang thing.
We could score. We couldn't stop them from scoring. That was a challenge.
A high scoring
game.
The
defense
huh?
was, they just beat us in points in the last minute. So, I don't even know where I was going with that. But
no, but it wasn't
always. Football was.
Yeah. You excelled at football. What other sports have you been into?
Yeah, I mean, I was an All American decathlete. So I was an
All American. 10 fundamental tests of human performance.
Yes.
Doing
yes.
A high.
So I was a decathlete, All American. I was a football American. I was All State in football, basketball, track in high school as well. And then. I was actually, this is a fun fact, I don't think I've ever mentioned on my podcast or anyone else's podcast, I was once ranked 99th in the world in air hockey.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Barbell Shrug. I used to run a site called sportsnetworker.com. I still own it today. And this one guy who was like the federation owner of the world championships for
World Federation
hockey,
whatever it's called.
Yeah, he like was trying to get more press about it and reached out. He said, why don't you come and compete and it'll be like a good story. And so I like trained with the world champion.
How do they train? And like they use like lead line
dude,
hockey.
This is a serious skilled sport actually.
Resistance like, bands.
It's insane how they move the puck or whatever it is. And
I don't even know the terminology.
I did it. But I showed up to the world championships. And I was like, I'm going to break top 100. There was like only 150 people, but I was like, I want to be ranked in the world.
Were people taking that competition just as intense as like
dude,
a football game
it
or whatever?
It was insane. Yeah, like the top 25 guys were like full on sweating. Like you put your knee up against the table and there's like a whole technique and they're just so, they're like dripping sweat. It's insane.
Like, hey, tall, handsome boy, I got you.
Yeah, exactly.
Performance enhancing drugs and air hockey. Was it present?
There was
obvious?
Nothing. It was drinking. That
alcohol?
Was the yeah, that
oh,
drinking alcohol.
Well, that's definitely performance enhancing up to the third beer.
Exactly. There you go. So I got injured playing football. I was playing arena football. I dove into a wall in arena football.
Because the wall is right there.
So close, yeah. So I dove in a wall, broke my wrist, dropped the ball, so it was even sadder. And then I have this scar right here. I don't know if you want to see the scar. So I had they took a bone out of my hip and I got a big scar there. They put it into my wrist. So I was in a cast from here to here.
Holy shit.
For 6 months on my sister's couch recovering, just trying to figure out what else.
What kind of break is that? That you would have to get a cast all the way to there for this?
The bone, it was like a bone graft. So the bone had crumbled because I played for 14 games with a broken wrist. You know, you just like tape it up.
Yeah.
And then afterwards I had surgery and they were just like, the bone had crumbled. They couldn't let me turn it because if I turned it this way at all, then it wouldn't heal.
Then, yeah, never healed.
So I had to be in this position. So I couldn't turn it. I couldn't straighten it. All I could do was this. But it was just like uncomfortable. So after I got that off, my dream of going to the NFL was over. But a few months after I got that off, it was the Olympics 2008 in Beijing. And at night one time, I watched highlights of like what happened in the non-big sports. And this sport called handball was on. And I was like, what is this sport? I'd never seen it before.
The 3 a.m. sports you don't get to see unless you stay up and like TiVo it and shit.
Exactly. And so they had this highlights for handball. It's called Team Handball in the U.S. And I was like, I was just blown away of how incredible this game looked. And I was like, this is perfect for me.
So it's kind of like racquetball, but without the racket? Is that easy way to
no,
describe it?
Completely different game.
Oh, really?
Come on.
Different
sport.
Like
Jesus
as the
Christ,
rules or what?
Different sport. So
okay.
There's handball where you hit a ball against the wall.
Right.
That's like the New York-style handball.
Okay.
Then there's team handball, which is one of the biggest sports in Europe, behind soccer and rugby. It's one of the biggest sports they have.
Okay.
And basketball. 25,000 people arena sold out.
Jesus.
In Germany, Spain, France.
Didn't hear that coming.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's massive. So I was watching this. It's essentially, imagine soccer on a big basketball court with your hands Or imagine, better yet, imagine water polo without water.
Okay.
So you're passing. You have two teams. You're passing. There's two goals with goalies. You throw it behind the goalie into the goal. Whoever scores the most wins.
Right.
So you're dribbling, you're running, you're passing back and forth, kind of like basketball meets soccer with your hands.
Right.
And you throw a ball into a net past a goal.
That actually sounds fun.
Let's get dressed like totally not what I thought was.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That sounds really fun to do, actually.
So I saw this at like 3 a.m. I just got my cast off. I'm like, my dreams of playing sports at a high level are over. And I saw this and I was like, whoa, my dreams are back. I was like, I'm going to go to the Olympics in this sport. So for 2 years, I tried to reach out to the USA Federation for handball. No one would get back to me. There was like, it's just pretty much like a bush league because there's no pro league in the U.S. So it's like very underfunded. It's like, you know, it's whatever. And no one would get back to me. But I saw that there's club teams all around the U.S. So these like amateur club teams in major cities. There was not one in Ohio at the time. So I said, okay, when I make enough money, I'm going to go to New York City, which is they'd won the national championships like the last few years in a row. And they had a website with their club team with the address of where they practice weekly. So I was like, okay, when I make enough money, I'm going to New York and I'm going to show up because no one got back to me when I would email or call. Mm. 2 years later, I made enough money in my business. I started building a business online. And I was like, okay, I've got money. Now I'm going to go there. No one still got back to me. I show up to practice.
2 years later.
2 years later in Brooklyn. I'm like this committed to this. I have this dream. I show up to practice 2 years later, and I go, hey, guys, my name's Lewis. It was their last practice of the season, and they just won the national championship the week before. And I go, hey, yeah, my name's Lewis. I'm from Ohio. I'm here to learn team handball and make the USA national team and go to the Olympics. And they just
like, who's this fucking
they
asshole
laughed their asses off at me. They were like laughing so hard. I was the only American there. So it's all European guys who were used to play professional, used to
I guess
get national
they played on their youth probably too.
They
played
came like up with 10 this. Years old, right? And they used to like make millions with this or whatever. Not millions, but they used to make a lot of money. This is their full time thing. And who had moved to New York to like live, they retired, so they were just playing for fun now. And they were laughing at me. And they were like, well, this is our last practice. We're not even playing handball today. They were like playing soccer for fun. Hmm. So like, come back in 3 months when we start the season again. So I was like, okay.
Really putting your dream to the test here.
Yeah, yeah, right? So I come back 3 months later. I stay in contact with them. I show up. I practice again. I go, my name's Lewis. I'm here to make the USA national team, to learn handball and make the Olympics. They laughed again, but I showed up every week to practice for 9 months until the next club championship. And they brought me under their wing. You know, they saw that I was like just working my butt off. I was willing to do the work.
Yeah.
Did they stop laughing at you once they realized that you were obviously athletic coming out of playing professional football? You're probably fast. You make fast cuts. Like you can probably throw hard. You're 6'3" or 6'4". 6'4". Like you got a fucking arm on you.
He's 6'4".
Yeah, yeah. they stopped laughing. I mean, they were like, the thing is, they all spoke different languages. It was like 16 different nationalities.
Wow. Mm.
I was the only American.
That makes it a lot more intimidating to kind of get in the mix and know what the fuck's going on, right?
They all knew the game. Like, they flowed. It was just like, it was like another language, right? They spoke another language and played a different language than me.
Yeah.
I could be athletic and physical, but it was still, they, you know, could just flow in a different way.
Is that contact at all?
It's very physical, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you had the ball and you were dribbling and you're about to shoot, I could come up and hit you as hard as I wanted to.
Oh, really?
Wow.
No, just right no pads. No pads.
Okay.
I can't hit you in the face. I can't right. elbow you. But I could, like, pretty much bear hug you and just, if I keep you up, if you fall to the ground, then it's going to be a 2-minute penalty on me.
Okay.
It's kind of like hockey rules.
Okay.
But it's amazing, man. So much fun. So anyways.
So like wrestlers would do good. They just like run up and pick somebody up and just like
can't slam them though. You got to keep them on the ground, up on their feet.
Okay.
But you could hit them really hard and like knock them back.
These guys like pull fouls like in basketball. Like they get touched.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of like, yeah, your
penis. Like, I don't know if this is on your official list of the 8 things we'll talk about in the second half of the show, but it seems like a bonus tip is that even with all your experiences in sport and everything you're capable of physically, you still had to identify something you want to do. And it sounds like you just didn't quit pursuing this thing until it just unfolded in a way that you could get into it and make progress. You kept fucking going to it.
Yeah. I mean, the main principle, the first principle of greatness is having a powerful vision. And as a child, I mean, you probably grew up thinking, you know, you want to play college sports or be a college football player or whatever it may be. But it's like I had this dream when I was 5 to be a professional athlete. And it almost took 2 decades for me to achieve that dream. I was talking about it earlier today. Like a president, think about a president of the United States. They probably have a dream when they're a kid to be a president. You just accidentally.
Well, everybody has that moment where they're like, I wonder if I could ever do something like that, insert whatever that big thing is.
There's something, a possibility comes from somewhere.
And of course,
right?
Everybody who, before they become that, they were nothing, and they had to overcome the thing, like, the belief that maybe they couldn't do that.
Yeah, but I think of a president, it takes them 5 decades on average till they become a president. 50 years of delayed gratification, of action taking, and a powerful vision until it actually happens.
Yeah.
And as pro athletes, it takes 2 decades, you know, until they become a pro athlete, usually. And yeah, man, it was just like constant focusing on my vision. I knew what my dream was, and I went after it. And with handball stuff, I was willing to sacrifice the time, the work, the energy. I built a business around my – so I could have money to go chase my dream. And that's what it was, the foundation.
So a lot of people can probably relate to the fact that they met some new people or someone they didn't know very well, and they presented an idea to them. They presented their dreams to them, something like you presented your idea that you want to go to the Olympics to these people who knew the sport. They knew you didn't know what the hell you were talking about because you were brand spanking new, and they laughed at you. Like, how do you react to something like that? Like, how do you not let that get to you?
You know, my whole childhood, I let it get to me, and I came from a place I'm going to prove everyone wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's why I became a great athlete in the first place, because I didn't have any friends. I didn't do well in school. And
What was your shittiest subject in school?
I mean, name any subject. You know, they were all shitty. Yeah, I mean, I was the lowest. In high school, I went to a private boarding school in St. Louis, Missouri, and they would give us a ranking on our grade card. I was always, every semester, in the bottom 4.
Dang.
So they tell you, you know how many students are in your class, in the school, in the class, and I was always in the bottom 4. And it's just a reminder of how much I sucked. It was like a reminder of me, like, you are stupid, you're ignorant, you're not smart. That's like what I kept telling myself.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because it's just that you weren't fit for that environment.
That type
you
of learning.
A different structure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it happens to a lot of kids. That's just one that really pisses me off.
Of course,
it happens to a lot of entrepreneurs.
But,
I mean,
yeah, entrepreneurs as well.
And I knew that I was smarter, but I just, like, it was hard when that's when you're graded on. It's like, you know, kids, we put that on ourselves. So I used that as an outlet. I was like, I'm going to prove all these people wrong. Like, fuck these people. I'm going to go be a great athlete. So I put all my energy and focus after school into sports. I would get up at 6 a.m. and train with the coaches. I was willing to do whatever it took to prove people wrong originally. Mm-hmm. Now I come from a much different space where it's not about proving people wrong. It's about lifting people up. Mm-hmm. And if they say you can't do it, I'm just like, I'm so committed to my vision that I'm going to go after it and I'll see if I can't do it. Like, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. But I'm going to go after it and at least not regret if I don't go for it.
Right. I feel like a good analogy is if you took a football tackle who's 375 pounds and you put him in a swimming pool and said, okay, we're only judging you on swimming, then based on your ability to swim, you're a bad athlete, and you just kept feeding him that he's a bad athlete the whole time, he'd probably never even try to go do something like the NFL because he's been told his whole life that he's a bad athlete, but it's just the wrong test.
Exactly.
I feel like that happens in education all the time now.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah. All right, should we take a break?
We're not going to go ahead and get a funny pause.
No, you know, you already ruined the first one.
We only
have 7 more principles. We only have 7 principles to go over in the second half of the show. So now that we're just down to 7, we have to take a break. So
okay. We'll be right back.
This is Tim Ferriss, and you are listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Barbell Shrugged is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrug.com and sign up for the newsletter.
And we're back with Lewis Howes. And we've got the 7.
Let one slip out of the bag.
He let one out. But we're going to go over the 8 principles of greatness. Is it principles?
Yeah, 8 principles of greatness.
8 principles of greatness. And you let the first one out of the bag during a story, which is totally fine. We'll forgive you. Which is, what was the first one? Vision?
Vision.
Yes.
Yeah, the greatest, when you think about it, the greatest, most inspiring people in the world, they all have vision in common. Mm. They don't just say, oh, I'm going to be the best golfer in the world, the best football player. They don't just like happen to become that. They dream about it every single day. They have the clear vision, and then they follow the next 7 steps.
So is that someone, actually, first of all, do you do coaching for people on things like this?
Yeah, I do some. I mean, I have an online academy where I coach and group coaching, and I do some one-on-one at a high level. So
okay, perfect. So so for the online academy and or people you coach, do you have any like tactical practices or daily routines or something like that where people can kind of define their vision and refer to it? Yeah, refer to it frequently.
Yeah. I'm happy to give an exercise right now. I mean, in the book, I have exercises at the end of each chapter that's like the action plan of what you need to do to take action on that step, on that principle. Mm. So one of the first exercises I give on vision, most people don't know what they want. They don't know what they're really passionate about, or maybe they have too many passions or too many ideas.
Too many is a big problem, right?
Yeah, it's like, oh, I have so many good ideas, I can't take any action, right? But a lot of people that don't know what they want, or they're just unhappy with where they're at and they're stuck. And they're like, well, what do I do to get to here?
Right. Well, it's like people in the fitness space. They're just like, I want to get in shape.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get in shape.
What do you really want?
Yeah.
And why?
Right.
So we start with, what do you really want? And I ask people all the time, what is it you want? Mm-hmm. And then they'll tell me an answer. And I'm like, well, okay, what is it you really want? And it's really, they can't
get tough. That's a tough question when you actually haven't had to sit down and answer that question.
Exactly.
You get a superficial answer and then you start peeling back the layers.
Okay, what is it you really want? Oh, I want to be rich. Okay, but what does that mean? Yeah, so it's really asking the question, diving deeper. One of the exercises I have in the book is called the Perfect Day Exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very simple and effective. But essentially, it's writing out about one page, it can be a half page to a page, just literally writing down what a perfect day would look like for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if your perfect day, which obviously is going to be different every day, because if you do the same thing every day, you'd be bored. But just imagine, like, who would you be hanging out with? Where would you be traveling? What would you be doing? What would you be eating?
What would you create?
Exactly. What would you be spending your time doing? Like, write it out. That's the first step, is just write it out. What would the perfect day look like? And then I learned a lot of my stuff from sports that I apply to business in my life. I look at my life as like a sport, and I apply everything that I learn in sports to my life. So what we do next is, every time in football, I don't know if you guys have this in Memphis, every practice we had an itinerary in our lockers.
Oh, yeah. I remember a lot of places to be at a certain time.
We had an itinerary. We had an itinerary, right?
This fucking sucks.
And if you know Chris Moore now, you know that,
I don't
that
show
being
up
at a certain place at a certain time is very difficult.
I don't want to show up anywhere when somebody says so.
Yeah, right. We had an itinerary every practice, and it was like kind of annoying at first, but you know what? Like, I really appreciated knowing every 10 minutes what we were doing. Special warm-up, water break, special teams, you know, offense, defense. Like, we always knew what we were doing.
I laugh about that shit now, but having a plan and stepwise to get a good day done, and then stacking five of those together to have a great week of practice, and then realizing that creates a great month of playing.
You build momentum, man.
Yes, exactly.
Build momentum towards your vision, towards your dream, right? And so we talk about the perfect day exercise, writing it out in broad terms, and getting, like, allowing yourself to dream. We don't fucking dream enough. So much clutter and chatter in our minds that we don't take moments to just dream about what we want. It doesn't matter what it is. We don't take the time. So write it down. Take the time to dream about your perfect day. And then you got to fit it in the time. So, okay, what does that look like? Hanging out with my friends, traveling, eating healthy, working out. Okay, write that shit down. Itinerary it, right?
Yeah.
So 8 a.m., you wake up for the first 30 minutes. What are you doing? 8:30, what are you doing? 9, all the way till the time you go to sleep. I tell people to write down their every day, their perfect day, so you can get really clear on what you're going to take the actions on.
And that doesn't have to be anywhere close to what your day is like right now. You're not optimizing your current day.
No.
You're writing like the grand vision for like the perfect day with no constraints.
Yeah, and then you're like, okay, what can I do today? I work a shitty job that's 9 to 5 that I can't do this perfect day. But you know what? I can wake up the first 30 minutes and practice gratitude, or I can wake up and work out, or I can...
Yeah.
Whatever, go spend the night with my friend and have dinner with my family. If that's important in my perfect day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's looking at how can you start restructuring that day so your perfect day becomes every day.
And it forms a daily practice for how you start building the vision. I think just the practice that gets you, I guess, maybe stretches your ability to think about what you actually could achieve.
Yeah,
and you start
being
more observant to seeing what you are actually achieving with this new approach. And I guess
that
gets people, maybe we're talking gym, maybe you go from, I want to have a good workout today, I want to hit this goal, maybe I can coach, maybe I can dream bigger than being a coach. I think it opens up a world where you can take any skill you've got and do great things.
That's it. I mean, I look at AJ, you know, it's like, he didn't one day just say, I'm 300 million pounds. And he didn't just say, I want to be lighter, you know, so let me just like lose some weight. He was like, no, I want to be 240 or whatever he said he wanted to be. I want to be 240. I want to go from being the strongest man in the world to the fittest man in the world. He had a very clear vision. He's like, I need to be 240. How much did you need to be? I don't know.
230, I think he said it was.
230
to get on.
230. He's
on
like,
stage
I need to be
as a bodybuilder.
So he needed to lose like 100 pounds. He had a very clear vision, and he knew, okay, what I need to do every single day to make this happen. He knew what he needed to eat, sleep, think, drink, who he needed to spend his time with, who his coaches, his team was. He knew what needed to happen. How long did it take? A year or a year and a half? Or
2 years.
2 years. So it's like he had a plan, and he had a dream. He was very intentional about his vision, and it just doesn't happen on accident. It happens with a clear vision.
Absolutely.
All right, so that's step one, have a clear vision.
Yes.
Well, step two?
Step two.
Are these actual steps in order, or are these principles?
These are principles, but this is the second principle. So what's the...
He doesn't know them by heart.
I know them by heart.
He's having to read them out of his own book.
I'm going to have a fun with
you busting his balls.
I'll do it by heart. The second one, what's the thing that the greatest, you know, when AJ, let's make AJ, you know, embarrass some more. So for two, for two years, he had this dream, this vision, you know, just like all great athletes have a vision to be great champions, right? Business owners want to make millions or billions, whatever it may be. He had this vision for 2 years. And what do you think happened along the way?
A lot
shit
of
shit happens.
Yeah, shit.
Bumps in the road.
Life.
Yeah.
Shit happens. Yeah.
You think it was easy to drop 100 pounds and become shredded? No. There was a lot of adversity for that guy for 2 years. He probably wanted to have fucking milkshakes left and right. He probably wanted to eat whatever he wanted. He probably wanted to do whatever he could do. And didn't want to train certain days, you know, didn't want to do the cardio, whatever it took. He didn't want to do that. So there was a lot of adversity that came up. And the thing is, we all have certain adversity. We've all gone through extreme adversity. It may not look like someone else's adversity. It may not be starving in a third world country, you know, with their whole family dying, you know, something like that type of adversity. But we go through physical traumas. We go through emotional, mental adversity on a daily basis.
And relatively speaking, it's intense. And it's
intense for us.
For us, it's just as painful in the moment.
It's just as painful as like losing your family and being, you know, homeless, right? Or whatever it may be. And when we learn to turn our adversity into our advantage, that's what it means to be great, is using that adversity and embracing it, not letting it hold you back, not making it that setback for you like AJ could have had for 2 years and setbacks, but he used the adversity as fuel to be his advantage.
Absolutely.
So that's the next principle, is turning your adversity into your advantage.
It always reminds me of anytime I've ever hit a moment that was one of these sticky moments, I remind myself that anytime I saw what somebody I looked up to was achieving, somebody I really idolized, or a writer, or a powerlifter, whoever it was I was trying to like mimic, basically.
Yeah.
Just to actively remind yourself that I'm seeing their highlight reel. What I'm experiencing is my behind-the-scenes footage.
Yeah, that's cool.
Just that little flip in perspective always helped me go, oh, yeah, like, they have just the same experiences. Yeah. All I got to do is just wake up again tomorrow and try again, and I can get through this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, absolutely. Think Schwarzenegger. Look at him. You know, one of the greatest bodybuilders and actors of all time. It's like he had it harder than all of us, probably, from leaving his family to, you know, not being able to speak English to just all the challenges that he had to overcome. Any one of them could have held him back to not being where he is at today. So that's the second one. The third one, can I go to the next one? Or
third principle.
You may.
Principle
you
number
may.
Three. Principle oh, man, three. I can't wait.
So this is what is it all champions have that's more powerful than everyone else?
Hot girlfriends?
That's one of them. Yes.
You're onto them.
What do you think they have that's more than the second place or anyone else after that? What does first place have? What do you think Rich Froning has over
confidence?
He has unshakable belief in what he's going to achieve.
Very good.
Belief?
Belief.
Mm.
So what I call the champion's mindset, developing the champion's mindset. You guys have interviewed a lot of top athletes. I've interviewed a lot of Olympic gold medalists and NFL players to everyone. And the difference between first and second is this champion's belief, this mindset. There's such a strong belief in themselves. And here's the interesting, it's perfect with Rich Froning. When you see someone being interviewed in the NFL or CrossFit, after they win a championship, a Super Bowl, and the winner, they say, you know, how did you do it? There's usually one of two responses. Can you guess what the response is?
Well, you just like, well, I just want to thank God and my coaches, and I just, you know, some canned thing they practice with a PR guy, like the first thing maybe.
What do you think? What might be another approach?
Well, the thing I always think about with Rich is that he's so cool, calm, and collected, 100% natural, and no matter what the outcome was, he's himself.
Mm.
The stone cold confidence and ability to, no matter what happened, to quickly resume his path of like being just who he is.
Yeah.
Very, very confident in his own skin is the thing I'm impressed with every time I see him.
Mm-hmm.
He can't be rattled back.
Yeah. The two things that I notice from the best and the best in the world is they have this strong belief in one of two things. Either God, which you said, it's like their faith. They say, you know, I want to give the glory to God. All the faith goes to God. You know, I'm just a vessel. I'm just the channel, whatever they want to say. But it's like they have this belief that someone or something or God is giving them the power to be great. And the second answer that most champions give is, I am the greatest fucking human being in the world. It's the Muhammad Ali approach. I am the greatest. I knew I was going to be the best. I knew I would win.
Yeah.
No one can out-train me. I. But it's like they believe in their core that they are the best thing since sliced bread.
And that's technically kind of the same thing.
It's Mayweather. Like, it's Muhammad Ali. I'm the best.
That's a God complex.
Right. There's so much belief
in
themselves.
Can be healthy in a certain context.
Well, I think what you get is that there's a lot of things, like Doug, you say this often, that you can put all the training and you can control the training variables, but the results and the circumstances you face can't necessarily be controlled. And if you have a rock-solid inner strength that you're fostering, you can do that through daily prayer, daily meditation, daily just diligence of reviewing what you think you can achieve and what you're going to achieve and what you hope to, all this stuff. Rock-solid inner strength gives you a foundation that to carry you through the ups and downs.
Exactly. So they have a belief in God or they have a belief in self. Whether it is they have a strong champion's mindset, they have this belief.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference maker between, you know, believing or second-guessing. You can be a great athlete, but if you're second-guessing your mind, you're not going to be a champion.
Absolutely.
So that's the third one?
Third one.
Principle number four is master your body. So you guys can appreciate this. For me,
I'm a master of my own flesh. I know that.
Exactly.
I'm 100% control of myself at all times.
Listen, and I'm definitely not perfect at all times. My health is, you know, up and down, and my weight fluctuates, things like that, you know. But it's our body and our health can either move us forward or hold us back. Mm-hmm. And it's fucking science. It's the weight is either going to hold us back if we're not carrying our weight in an efficient way, if it's just like overweight and obese, and it's going to mentally hold us back, emotionally hold us back, and physically hold us back.
Sure.
And I think Richard Branson, one of the wealthiest guys, most successful businessmen in the world,
mm-hmm.
I can't remember the exact quote, but someone said, what's the key to success in business?
Mm-hmm.
He said, your health.
Mm-hmm. I think he said working out.
It's like working out, right? It's like working out. And it's like so true. It's like when our body is in unison with our vision, with our dreams, and it's in alignment with it, we are going to have more energy to achieve what we want. We're going to have better energy to not react and be negative towards people if something happens, or have road rage, or be resentful to our kids if they're like screaming. We're going to be compassionate. We're going to be loving, understanding.
That's what this here stands for, man. This whole deep thing we got going. Really, and it looks silly at first, but really it stands for drop everything and train. It's what we believe in.
Yeah.
It's like the drumbeat of what we do. And that we have experienced more than anybody that when you're trying to just achieve and do good things, everybody's going to have things they're trying to do, gym, work, family. But the thing is, sometimes you want to give too much to one thing. And in this case, sometimes sleep and training take the backseat to everything you want to do in business and life. And then you realize that totally destroys your chances of achieving if you let your physical being and the mind get dulled by stepping away from that. So every morning, getting up and training sets a drumbeat for that diligent daily practice, sets a whole other rhythm for your day, man.
I love it, man. And, you know, there might be billionaires out there who, you know, can make a ton of money, but it's like, if you haven't learned how to be healthy while you make the money, then for me, it's not really true greatness.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you've got to be a six pack and you've got to be perfect with everything, because we're human beings. We're not going to be. And I'm definitely like out of shape for me right now. I've got like a few pounds I want to lose. And sometimes things fluctuate, but it's
you
like
stay in peak shape all the time.
No, it's tough, man. Yeah. And it's about seasons. You know, AJ's in an off season, and that's why he's got a couple of
just call AJ
of
fat.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
To your point from a second ago, I do think that your physical health supports your mental health.
Like it does.
You made a point a second ago about if you're drained and you're tired physically, then, you know, you might be overreacting to your kids, like being out of line or something like that. Like your physical health supports your mental health, which supports your intellectual health, supports your spiritual health. Like, but all kind of stems from your physical health, and
it does.
The downstream effects of not having your physical health handled can really affect your mind and your spirit in a way where you're just not the person you need to be, like, to other people. You're not as loving as you would be to other people simply because you just don't eat the right foods, you don't get enough sleep, and you don't work out. You're not fit.
Yeah,
I find that people don't have as much fun.
Like, they're not shaped.
Nobody can outfun me.
Right.
Like,
you're feeling this way because you just got back from Burning Man, so you're feeling like you've had a lot of fun.
Well, that's the thing. Is like, people can't hang. People get sick during the week.
Yeah, they're
trying to have fun.
Or whatever.
And I can just keep going and going and going. Yeah. So it's like, but the thing is like, I've noticed that people out of shape can't have as much fun. If you're in shape, you will have more fun when you go out.
You can have a certain amount of fun, but you can't sustain the fun.
Exactly.
You don't have the energy.
Yeah.
You just don't physically have the energy.
You're able to abuse your body harder than all those burners because you're fit.
Mike, how do you keep dancing on the playa till 4 a.m.? I'm in shape, bro.
No, it's true, though. Like,
you're in shape, plus true. You have things.
People got sick during the week.
Yeah,
they got sick. They couldn't hang. They had to take a day off.
Sleep, whatever. Yeah.
I didn't take any days off.
There you go. Freaking true burning man right there.
All right. What is the next principle? Principle five?
That was principle number five.
Was that four? So five
four.
Is develop hustle.
So
for me, this is, you know, you guys will appreciate this, but for me, I really didn't feel like I had a talent in business. Like I didn't have the information. I have a business degree. I didn't, you know, in sports too, I was like, I had sure hands, but I wasn't the biggest, fastest, or strongest on any team. But I was willing to grab any loose ball and sacrifice my body to make a play.
Special team hustle, man.
I was willing to make a play at any moment, and that, like, you can't put, like, a value on that. It's just, like, so valuable. You can't put a price on it. Mm-hmm. When someone out-hustles, it's like you will always want that person on your team. You'll always want to have that person around. So most people, I think now the younger generation, you know, guys just getting out of school and things like that, they don't hustle. They don't hustle like some of us do, you know?
So, like,
and I think that's the difference maker.
Your work ethic trumps talent is kind of what you're saying. Like, talent definitely matters. And, you know, you talk to anybody in NFL, they're not like, well, not just anyone can make it to the NFL. Yes. There's a certain breed of person who has the requisite ability. Then they also have to train hard to get to the NFL. But if you look at like Navy SEAL training, you go to Buds, like a lot of those guys have more talent. They look like more of a stud than some of the other guys, but some of the guys just don't quit. They fucking work. They're just workhorses in general, and they just don't fucking stop. And they keep going. They end up being Navy SEALs. A lot of the other guys who have the talent, they have kind of the genetics for it. They wash out simply because they're not willing to work that goddamn hard.
That's it.
And I think in performance in the gym, getting strong, fit, learning complex movements, achieving awesome things, going from non-competitor to achieving something in CrossFit Games rankings, whatever you want to achieve. I think there's the big things that are obviously what you want to be able to achieve, big things you need, genetics, whatnot. But I think what separates people and me looking back on any success I had is the times when I was committed to doing all the little boring things day in and day out. Like I had trained that day and I got home and I realized something was sore, something was stiff.
And
taking the time to not get on the couch,
but
to do a little extra thing. Looking ahead, knowing that little bit of effort would allow my next session to be 5% better, that I would recover this much better.
Exactly.
Nothing big, no huge performances, no big loud gestures, just small fundamentals made all that difference.
Right. I've also seen people look at people who and go, oh, they're just a genetic freak. Mm-hmm. And what they don't see, I'm like, and I know the person they're referring to, and going, no, I've never seen anyone hustle that hard before.
Sure.
They are where they are due to the amount of work they put in. Again, we kind of talked about this, is they're seeing a snapshot in time. They're seeing them right now.
Exactly.
They're seeing the result. They're not seeing the work that was put in. And people love to go, oh, steroids, or they love to say, genetics. And
Or well, it's easy because,
it could be for the last 8 years, they did nothing but train and eat, and everything they did was to support that one goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think of AJ again. It's like he was like, what, a buck 35 playing basketball in the UK? Like,
genetic freak.
Scrubbing it out. and then was like, oh, I want to be the strongest man in the world. It took him a decade to put on 100 and something, 25 pounds to get to that level of pain and sacrifice. He just hustled. He wasn't already big and strong.
Yeah, AJ, those genetic tests you did, were you a power athlete or endurance? How were you rated? We all had DNA testing.
The DNA fit kits.
And part of it was, the DNA fit. Was it? I forget the website.
DNAfit.uk,
maybe?
Google it. Google will take you where you need to go. Shit.
So, but he took that, and it was, it'll tell you if you're more suited for power or endurance. And it showed him as being suited more for endurance.
Wow.
And he's one of the most powerful guys in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I look at it. And I look at my buddy. I think of my buddy Graham Holmberg too. You know, we would play college football. The guy wasn't that big at all. He wasn't that strong. He was just like a good runner, a good athlete. And then watching him transition from, just being a good athlete to like dedicating to just training and hustling. And he was never like the most genetically looking guy in the CrossFit Games. He just like was willing to work his ass off. And
you call him Graham Fat.
I mean, the guy has just trained so hard and he's been so dedicated to that hustle where Most people just will do a good workout, but he does a great one every day over the years.
We're talking about belief and vision. I say, as a big warning to anybody listening, if you catch yourself going, man, I wish I could do X, Y, Z like that guy, but man, he's got this stuff going on that I ain't got. Yeah. You got to fucking rip that out by the root. That's a belief that's just going to shit in your Cheerios the rest of your life.
Exactly.
You put that on a T-shirt, Lewis.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't
exactly.
shit in your Cheerios. Believe in yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Does that bring us to principle six?
I think it does.
Yeah, principle six.
This principle is number six.
What you guys talk about, and I know you guys interview a lot of guys and ask these questions, it's all about the rituals and the practicing positive habits. Mm. So the positive habits are the difference maker for a lot of the people who are making the billions to just making the millions to making nothing. The greatest athletes and non-great athletes is like they set themselves up to win with practicing positive habits every morning, every day, every night. They have rituals, they have routines that set them up to win. And so it's establishing those habits and always reevaluating after every season, every off season, like what are the habits that are working? What's not working? What can I incorporate into my routine for my health, my business, my relationships? And for me, I look at greatness as a holistic approach to life, not just, I don't care if you're a great CrossFitter, if you suck in life, if you can't have a conversation with me without being an asshole, if you can't keep a job because you're just focused on one thing, if you can't have, you know, great relationships with your family, like, that's not greatness if you're the best in the world at one thing. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Like, tell me how great of a person you are. And so it's really establishing habits in all areas of life so that supports you being a great symbol for inspiration for what you're putting your energy into for the rest of the world. But if you're a dick and an asshole and, you know, just not a good role model at what you do, you're great at it, but you don't set a good example. It's like, what's the point? You're just wasting your talent.
Right. Whenever we go to masterminds, one of the first questions I ask from all the people that are there is like, what are you doing here? Like, what do you expect to get out of this? Yeah. And inevitably, my response is, I just want to be around people that have their shit together.
Yeah.
Like people that are competent in all kind of the major self-help areas, like health, wealth, and relationships. They have their shit together in all those categories. Yeah. Like, they're in good shape. They're not sick. They eat well. They exercise. They get enough sleep. They have awesome relationships with their family and their friends. And they have really cool family and friends because those people want to be around that person. And then, you know, business money wise, they have the shit together. They don't have to be an entrepreneur necessarily. But you know they have to be in a role at some job, or they own their own thing where they're following kind of their dreams, as you're saying, or they just happen to be particularly good at what they're doing and passionate about it at the same time, and that leads to them being very emotionally stable most of the time because they spend every day doing something they're enjoying. That way, they're not walking around chronically angry because who wants to be around someone that hates their job because they're going to be always kind of just like like trying not to bite your head off, you know, because they know it's the wrong thing to do because they're not mad at you. They're mad at their job. They're mad at their whole situation. So the more I can be around people that have their shit together, the better my life seems to be as well.
Of course. That's it.
In regard to the rituals, is like I've got like most of my days, at least the first 2 hours, there's very specific things that happen. There's things that happen before bed. And the thing that I've noticed is I can wake up in the morning, and if I don't feel right, I can replay the day before and go, where did I screw up? Or what changed? And if you can do a lot of things that are very regular and keep things consistent, you can identify the things that throw you off.
Exactly.
And so if you don't have any rituals, you just kind of go through every day as like, oh, I wake up and I kind of stumble in the bathroom and brush my teeth, and then I end up at work and I'm eating a breakfast burrito on the way there. You know, like
let's see what happens the day.
Yeah, if you're running through your day like that and every day seems really screwy, there's no way you can identify. You can't identify what's throwing you off.
And you get one bad break in that scenario, and you got no power to resist the current of life pulling you in a shitty direction. And I would say one thing we do with our programming, I just want to toot our own horn for a minute, but I believe in having great planning to be really strong. Mm-hmm. But what makes athletes great is the kind of habits you put into place to make sure the plan gets executed. So how people sleep and prepare meals and how they approach their training daily. I think you get a strong person that way. I think you get an athlete also that to other people looks not only strong and fit and capable, but acts better, engages with the people around them, helps spread the knowledge that they're learning. And that becomes a way for a coach or anybody who's helping other people. You spread your message. You sort of create an effect where you're helping to change the world in better ways, not just helping people get stronger and leaner, but you're spreading a way better message.
Of course.
So habits are from everything.
What are some of the patterns you've observed from all the people that you've interviewed over the years as far as their daily habits? What do successful people do?
Yeah, I mean, some of the common themes is they wake up a little earlier than most people. Mm-hmm. So some people, you know, I interviewed a guy named Eric Thomas, Eric, the ET the Hip Hop Preacher. He's on YouTube. He's a big YouTuber.
This guy sounds interesting.
Yeah, okay. He's pretty awesome. And
he's not as interesting as my tattoo artist. My tattoo artist is a preacher and a firefighter and a mixed martial artist.
That is cool.
Yeah, so there's some wild characters out there. There's some wild characters out there you can find and learn interesting shit from.
Yeah. Were we zoomed in on Lewis's face? It was like, oh, wow. Ooh, wow. That's amazing.
You know, but a lot of the great minds I've interviewed wake up earlier. Mm-hmm. Maybe from, you know, some guy wakes up like 4 a.m. and some are just earlier than most people when they're going to their job. Mm-hmm. A lot of people read in the morning. A lot of people I've seen the common theme is they read for 30 to 60 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. A lot of people write in the morning.
Zig Ziglar.
Yeah, there are a lot of people create.
We talked about the reading in the morning. Yeah.
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 You have Zig Ziglar.
I do. Oh,
Zig Ziglar,
yeah, I have Zig Ziglar cassette tapes. Like, wow. From, like, old I listened school. To those old in, like, school. High right. school.
Entrepreneurial hipster.
I like that. A lot of the great minds work out before anything else. They do some type of movement. They walk, they run, they work out, they lift, they do some type of sweating before. A lot of them stretch as well. Before they start their day, they're stretching. Then it's a healthy green juice, green smoothie. I hear a lot of them repeating that. Mm-hmm. But for me, something I like to do every single morning is express my gratitude. I feel like if I'm grateful for everything I have, then I'm opening up more to be grateful for to come in. Mm-hmm. So I'm always expressing it in the morning with whoever's around, or I'm writing it down in a journal, the things I'm grateful for. Mm-hmm. Just grateful to be alive.
That's
another
the
day.
Mistake people make. Sorry, Doug, I cut you off. People think about what they want to achieve maybe a little too much, and they forget everything they've already been able to achieve.
Yeah,
and like in the short term, they don't take the time to give themselves just a pat on the back and love.
That's it, man.
Say, I've even though I'm not where I would hope to be, I've come so far. Just that act gives you the fuel to push on for a long time. Right?
Acknowledgement. You know, a lot of people don't acknowledge themselves. And, you know, if I get this all the time. If you compliment someone or you did a great job, they say, oh, no, you know, it was nothing, or, you know, I could have been better.
I'm bad about
that.
They
don't acknowledge where we're at. And I'm the king of that as well. I have been my whole life. And this is why I teach it, because it's something I need to learn myself. But when we acknowledge ourselves, we're able to bring in more great acknowledgement. You know what I mean? We're able to achieve more when we're acknowledging where we're at. And that's why, for me, it's like a daily practice to acknowledge myself, my team, my family, my loved ones, the ones around me.
That's a big one, too, is I found like the most awesome habit you can get going. We've done this, giving better hugs. And when you see somebody who you go, that person looks great today, did a good job on that thing, achieved something cool. Going out of your way just to make sure you build the ritual of saying it to them. Because all the shit you leave unsaid, just the act of repeating that gesture makes you a whole lot more likely to give it back to yourself. But that raises the tide for everybody around you in your life.
This is a whole other topic. You know, this is another book I'm thinking about doing called The Power of Acknowledgement. Because
you're not satisfied with the work it took to make that one.
Yeah, no, I'm very satisfied.
Self-flagellate yourself around, too.
This is my masterpiece, actually. This is what I've been wanting to do for 7.5 years, which is a whole other story. But, you know, why do we create in the first place? Why do we want to be great athletes? Why do we want to have a podcast that people watch and listen? Like, why do we want to do big things? It comes from our core of wanting to be seen and being acknowledged for our gifts.
Seeking significance.
For our talents. Mm-hmm. The thing is, we're so driven to create something so meaningful, and yet we never get acknowledged for it until the day we die. Then everyone comes out and acknowledges us where we can't even receive it. But what would life look like if we could be acknowledged and acknowledge other people on a daily basis and experience the love and the joy and the acknowledgement that people always wanted to say to you, but they couldn't? So I love that you say you're constantly going out of your way now to acknowledge people. I think it's powerful.
I think it's something we've all been working on.
It's not easy.
Of all the things I'm thinking I started doing this year that I'm really grateful for, I think that's one that's really helped me. Because you can't leave things unsaid. That's just a shame. You can't get that opportunity back.
That's it.
All right, that was principle number six.
Principle number seven.
Seven out of eight.
So these are the best two principles.
So this is why. So why do you think the podcast has been so successful? Your podcast.
Well, I mean, my first thought is that we've just tried to always keep it as honest and as real as possible. Like, I think anytime we do this show, this is exactly how we would talk if we were just sitting around in my garage with cocktails on a Friday night. I mean, we try to be real and express something that actually resonates with us on a personal level.
Right. Okay.
What? Consistency.
Consistency.
Every single week, every Wednesday, we put it out. No matter what, no matter, like, there it wasn't always easy to get it out every week.
Fuck
and
no,
so
man.
So it's like every
it doesn't matter how tired we make CTP in Charlotte. We'll do it.
That's right. But the commitment to every single week has allowed us to be where we are, for sure.
Well, what would you say is the reason why it's so successful?
Similar to what Chris said, actually. So quality-wise, I feel like we are having a very organic, authentic conversation. And you're kind of just a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to have, you know, something like this 20 years ago, like where you could just listen to people who've been doing something for 20 or 30 years and they are amongst the best in the world at it, and you could just, like, you'd be like, man, can I give you $5,000? Like, I'm just gonna sit in the corner,
right.
y'all just talk. I'm just gonna listen from over here. Don't even look at me. Like, right. I just, like, most people would tell you no. Like, having that opportunity wasn't even possible on a grand scale until recently with this new thing called podcasting.
Yeah.
So I think that to get that information, the information we're sharing like this, any other way is very formal and very, very structured compared to the organic conversation that we're having. And I think a lot of podcasts are very one-on-one interview style, and it's not quite as conversational when you have three or four people. The dynamic between three or four people is very different than the kind of the back and forth of an interview.
Sure.
So I really like that about our show specifically.
I love it. Those are all good answers. So maybe
you
we got it wrong.
I didn't set you up. I set you up to fail there.
Okay.
Great plug for your audience to know why it's so powerful. Now, what if you had one bad apple in the mix? Would it be as powerful?
One single bad show?
I mean, bad person working as a team.
Well, we wouldn't do that. We would get rid of that person.
You'd get rid of them. Okay.
They would have never gotten in the first place.
No one's ever going to hear from that person again. So,
have you had to let go of some people that weren't as good?
There have been some people that have fallen to the side.
And have you and have you brought on great talent?
Sure.
We have.
To enhance the team,
look
right?
at you, Charlotte.
So then the seventh principle, I don't care who you are, what industry you're in, you've got to build a winning team.
Mm-hmm. Man.
Well, it was all useful information.
It was great information. No,
but he was referencing the show, not the business.
Yeah.
If he had asked about the company, it would have been obvious.
There you go. Exactly. My mistake.
Bad question, Lewis.
So
he's just mad because you got him.
Building a winning class team and learning how to connect with all different types of personalities.
Right.
So understanding human beings, understanding how we work, and also understanding how to bond a team together towards a common vision. You know, the greatest entrepreneurs in the world know how to build winning teams. Even if you're an individual CrossFit athlete who seems like an individual sport, you've got fucking 30 people in your corner.
Dude, you cannot do that
shit.
You
can't do it on your own.
You can have, like I said, if you had the best sports scientist in the world analyze your DNA, look at your life, give you the perfect meal plan, the perfect training program, every load of everything you could do set perfectly and precise so you could recover. If all that is just perfect and you're on your own or you're with somebody who's competing for other things that aren't for your improvement in the gym, if you're working with a group of athletes who we're not all trying to get better, if you're not working out with somebody who's complimentary to you, is helping you achieve, if you don't have support structure in the gym, all that shit won't matter for anything.
That's it.
If you don't have a coach who sees that too, it won't matter for anything.
You got coaches, you got the physical trainers, you got the chiropractors, you got your teammates who push you. You've got all these people, even if you're an individual athlete, that it takes to become the greatest that you can become. You know, Rich Froning doesn't just sit in a garage by himself every day. He's got people who are supporting him.
Well, I think that's one thing he excels at, is having people around him who play hard.
Exactly.
Push him very hard, and pushes back.
And could you do this podcast and this business on your own?
No, I mean, there's
to the level it's at.
No, there's plenty of moments where if you hit one of those low points, it'd be easy to say, you know, maybe this week I just don't have it. I won't put it up. I'm not confident. Together, because we're together, we help each other through any of those moments and make sure the finished product is strong.
And could you have the video production quality, the intellect, the connections to get the guests on, the resources, the editing power, the reach to get it as big as you guys have got it on your own? It couldn't happen.
Because we're together, I think it allows our weaknesses to not matter as much and our strengths to shine more, because we can lean on each other to get the support we need. And when it comes time for us to leverage something we're really strong at, we have the opportunity to do so.
Right. Exactly. And for everyone listening, you know, to relate this back to yourself, like if you're trying to get in shape and you're trying to do it all by
yourself,
alone at your house, like you're trying to read books and maybe watch some YouTube videos, and like you don't talk about it with your friends, like you don't have a coach, you don't have anyone help you with nutrition, like you don't have anyone help you with mobility, like you need someone many people, many a people. Team to help you do that. Everyone I know that's successful in the world of sports, business, fitness, doesn't matter. They do have that team, as you said.
Exactly. So building a winning team, that's, for me, a key principle. And I used to try to do it all on my own. You know, even with Graham, you know, he used to be kind of known as like the lone wolf or whatever. And I was like, dude, you got to start bringing more people on your team. It's just fucking exhausting to do it on your own. Just the energy wise.
Even if you can't achieve sustainability, man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, he started to really allow other people to come on his team and like emotionally, physically, all these different things. And it took the weight off his shoulders. And I watched that happen, you know? So you gotta build a winning team. That's number seven. So the eighth principle.
Oh boy, hold on. Build up.
No. Let's talk about it next week.
No. Part two. Lewis Howes. The eighth thing. It's like the
something tells us it's gonna be a good principle.
48 laws of power, right? It's like Robert the 50th law.
But the 49th part. Buy all of Robert's books, man. They're pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
What you're saying, you can skip the one he did with 50 Cent. It's all right, but it's a book written with 50 Cent. Yeah. So it's got its ups and downs.
Exactly.
But yeah, this book
just ruined our chances of interviewing 50 Cent.
Yeah.
We'll get him anyway.
Just edit, so 50 Cent.
50, how do your pecs get so big?
50. I said 50 because I'm cool.
Go ahead, principle number eight. Okay. So principle number eight. So we talked about all these cool things, these seven powerful principles that all the people I've interviewed, and I'm sure you guys have interviewed all these people, a lot of the same people who have these same characteristics. Let's see. We'll say one word. We'll let you guys
Here you guys, another quiz.
I don't think anyone's read the...
this is the worst interview ever.
Have we got any right? Have we got any questions right yet? I don't think anyone's read the book yet. So one word would be the eighth principle for you. What would it be?
In terms of like how do you achieve the most in life? Like how do you really achieve greatness?
What would be the eighth principle?
I would say, it's something I've been thinking about lately. I'd say once you learn to untie your ambitions from wanting to prove something to other people how great you are, and you turn the root of your ambition towards wanting to help other people be better than you. That's what I would say.
Okay.
It's not one word, but that's the only way I could get it.
That's good. That's fine.
I'm sorry. That's the way I chose.
I got
the
essence. Okay. So if that was a word, what would that be?
I'm also a rebel, so I don't listen to what you have to say. Give.
Okay.
I have no idea.
You have no idea. Well, say a word.
I don't know.
An idea, a principle.
Burning.
Yeah, let's get a dog. I'll have to think about it.
We'll come back.
Word.
Pass. Love. You got to operate from a place of love.
Okay.
How close are we? Well, you're not close at all.
I'll tell you once we get all three, you guys.
Can you say titties or something? Just say something.
I mean, titties are pretty powerful.
Titties.
Love, giving, titties.
You're playing the game of, okay, what do I really think it is, and what do I think he thinks it is? which answers should I
really
give?
I really am not coming up with anything. It's a complete blank. Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
He's got you.
You are ruining his
pegged.
Game.
I'm sorry. It's
okay.
I think belief. Okay. I mean that, but you already hit that.
That's, all right, yeah. we'll leave it there. So this is you guys kind of had it right. You're both in the same ballpark.
See, yeah. Because we answered, that was the right thing to do. you can't just not go on. You got to keep going, right?
Well,
persistence,
adversity,
consistency,
man.
Right?
Turn your adversity into your advantage.
That's right.
So the eighth principle is living a life of service.
Oh, yes.
Which is giving, coming from love. Motorboating titties.
Yes. Those ladies need your help.
They need your help.
Trust me. That is an act of service.
Trust me. I'm over here like, man, I got stuck with love.
Exactly.
He's got titties.
I could have said motorboating? Yeah, but in all seriousness, I mean, you know, for a long time, I wanted to achieve things. I wanted to make money. I wanted to be an All-American. I wanted to be a pro athlete for selfish reasons. I was coming from a place of selfishness. And when I
trying to overcome those experiences, you feel like you had to prove something.
But it wasn't coming from like a foundation. I was a loving guy. It wasn't like I was not loving, but it wasn't like always coming from a place of service. It was more of like, how can I help myself and how can I make myself look good? And when I started to shift that and realize that, hey, it is about what we're doing. You guys are in service every day. You're spending a lot of your time and money and resources to put something out there in the world to improve people's lives. And so you're in service constantly with the show, with your business, with everything you do. You're helping people improve their life and achieve their goals. And that's living a life of service. It's also just giving a longer hug to someone is living a life of service.
I will give Mike Bledsoe credit here. Mike has acquired amazing hugging skills. If it gives you a hug when you leave here, you have to feel it extra special.
I'll give you my special hug.
Well, hug off.
Yeah.
All right. A lot of people I interview, it's like they come from such a place of like wanting to give back. They want to be of service. They want to just help people in a deeper, meaningful way. And that's like their mission. It may be to be a great athlete, but it's like, I want to be a great athlete to inspire people with the gifts that I have.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
give them like another hope. And I want to build this business because what we're building is helping, you know, people with their health. And it's like saving lives. Like that's where the mission we're coming from.
I've seen this happen with a lot of folks who they achieve some level of success.
Yes.
Out of like selfish motivation. And yes. then there's something that happens in their life where something, the switch flips and they move to that orientation of service.
Yes.
And when that happens, that's when they blow up.
That's it.
That's when amazing things happen in their life. And it's one of those things where I almost feel like people have to get to a certain level. And then that when that switch flips, it's like, oh.
Yeah,
it's
see
like
it for
obvious.
Yourself.
You hit that switches and you go, oh, that's where I should have been coming from the whole time.
You know, a great example is I'll say a good friend of ours, friend of our show, Travis Mash, man. Mm-hmm. For years, he's somebody I looked up to because he was one of the best powerlifters in the world. AJ would back it up. He was so strong and so accomplished. He could squat over 1,000 pounds weighing 242 pounds.
What?
Yeah, really, really strong, powerful man. And we were just with him last week, and one thing he says is back in those days, I didn't want to like really say it, but I was a dick and I was miserable. So he was proving. Everybody looked at him. You're so strong, but in his heart, he didn't feel very strong.
Yeah.
And I think when people try to achieve just for impressing, the thing you're going for will always leave you feeling the opposite way. And he's interesting too, because now he's 42 years old, and as strong as really he's ever been, given that he doesn't really train as hard. Mm-hmm. But what has flipped with him is that his focus now, he's one of the most loving, kind guys, as strong as he is. And he goes, what makes me so happy is to know that I can turn these experiences back and help my young athletes believe in themselves and have pride and think about what they can achieve. And not only does that give him that significance and happiness he felt he lacked when he was achieving or striving in his younger days, but now he's performing just as well, if not more impressively, because he's doing a wider range of physical activities. So like it opens up all these new layers of potential within you once you get that. Once you start looking for ways to give back, it doesn't take anything away from you, actually.
Yeah. You know, I think Tony Robbins said the key to living is giving, and it's being of service. And all these, the wealthiest people that I interview in business, when I ask them, it's like, what do you do with your money? They're constantly giving it away. They're constantly giving it back to charities or things they believe in that they're inspired by. And it's not like they're not hoarding their money. They're giving their money or they're giving their time or their talent, whatever it may be. And that's really the key. It's like if you want to make more money, you got to give more money away. Obviously, you got to be smart. You don't want to just give it all away. You got to be smart and have like a balance. But you got to like come from a place of how can I give and be of service constantly.
Yeah, who was the person that said if you want to make $1 billion, you got to help a billion people?
Yeah, I think it was Zig Ziglar, actually. I think it was your boy.
There you go.
Yeah,
something like that.
Well,
it comes, from Mike's house.
Yeah, exactly.
It comes so full circle with Mr. Ziglar.
Yeah. It's true, though. When you learn to help, I think it's if you help a billion people and learn how to capture the value, then you can make the money. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of great people who serve a lot of people in the world but don't make any money because they don't feel worthy enough to make that money. Mm-hmm. So they don't learn how to capture it. So I think you got to actually capture it as well.
Yeah, a lot of people have an aversion to capturing some of that money and monetizing for some reason.
They feel guilty. They don't feel worthy. They don't feel whatever. So.
Right. Yeah, they don't feel worthy. We'll talk about that on Barbell Business.
There you go.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Segway.
If people want to find you, where do they go?
They can go to lewishouse.com, greatnessbook.com for the book, or School of Greatness Podcast.
Or just come to his living room.
And I will say,
like
man,
excellent.
School of Greatness Podcast is really cool.
Thank you, man.
We're just listening to the Laird Hamilton episode coming up.
Yeah,
the breathing.
Yeah.
Did you get in the water and freak out with the underwater training?
We just did an hour of breathing on the deck. We didn't even do any working out, and it was one of the hardest workouts of my life.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
When people
intense,
get their head
man.
Around how to breathe properly, it's like
it
that's
intense.
Way harder than any wads you've done up to date.
Oh, my gosh.
Go listen to the episode, learn a little bit about breathing, folks. I think you'll love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having
me. Make sure to go to barbellshrug.com. Sign up for the newsletter.
Newsletter.
It's a new thing.
It's really cool.
Anyways, do that. Check out the merch shop so you can find t-shirts like what Chris Moore might be wearing right now. And I'll see you next time.